Hello everyone, welcome back to the NBL Pocket Podcast. I hope you're enjoying life in self-isolation, and I hope this podcast finds you and you listen to it and hopefully extract some enjoyment from it. Let's look at what's going to happen in this episode. Actually, before I even do the rundown, I want to give a big hello and thank you to Allison C, who sends me messages from time to time saying how much she likes the podcast, and they're very sweet and I really appreciate it. So thank you very much, Allison. I appreciate it. But looking at this, we're going to go through the wage cuts that have happened from the NBL. It's a very interesting time there and the parameters. If you haven't seen Olgan Ulick's tweet on this, you definitely should. We're going to talk about importless NBL 21. We're going to have a look at who would win an NBL 21 without imports. That's a very difficult question to answer, so I kind of do it in a different way, but that's something you'll enjoy, I'm sure. On NBL news, just quickly, Kevin White has been sacked, which is, I don't think anyone is surprised. The 36ers have come out and said it was a result of wanting to do something different in their backcourt rotation. Call me skeptical or cynical, but I don't really buy that so much. I think it really does relate to the Joey Wright situation. I think we'd all agree. I've made my thoughts pretty clear on that, as in I think I stand with sort of Joey Wright on this one, but I don't think Kevin White did a bad thing necessarily. I think the way he did it was probably not ideal, especially if he wanted to retain the second year of his contract. I guess Kevin White had his I'm Spartacus moment, and I just hope the juice is now worth the squeeze. Funnily enough, though, with the current deal that's just come out, odds are he may see another contract in the NBL. There are very few NBL players going around and with less imports, but then again, less roster spots. We'll talk about that later. Emiliano, who was on my last podcast, Emiliano Caccia from sportando.basketball.en, was right. His 50% wage cut for the larger contracts has happened. So I just want to say congratulations to Emiliano. And if you're listening, maybe go back and have a listen to that episode as well. And then we talk about Andrew Bogut's response to this whole thing. So let's now go into it. Let's have a real good look at the wage cuts that have been agreed to by, well, the owners, the NBL, and the NBL player delegates. Each team puts up two people. So 15 of the 18 delegates voted in favor of the measures. So each team has two delegates, 2 times 9 equals 18. My first question is, I wonder who the three who disagreed were. Will we ever find that out? Who knows? Were they two from one team and one from another, or all three from separate teams? So in other words, were there two people from, say, Melbourne United and one person from Cairns? Or was there one from Perth, one from Cairns, one from Melbourne? I'm using them as examples, but that's an interesting thought. Why did the three disagree, I wonder? There's one guy who's obviously gone against his fellow delegate. I wish we could have that conversation with them. Will we ever have it? Probably not. Looking also at the wage cuts, so the minimum salary goes to 60K, because I was of the understanding that last year it was 55. So it's gone up 5K, which certainly suggests that NBL teams on the whole spent over the salary cap. Because as my understanding of it goes, is that the wage goes up with relative to spending. So I think a certain amount of the over cap goes towards the new cap, which raises the minimum. I could be way off there, but nonetheless, minimum is at now 60. Players earning between $60,000 and $79,000 won't be affected by the wage cuts. They get the same amount. Players earning over 200K will be hit by a 50% wage reduction. That again, 200K. You would think that's most, if not all, imports and marquee players. Bogut. I mean, we look at Casper Ware and Cotton. I heard rumors that they were on anywhere from 600,000 for Cotton, 800,000 for Casper. Completely unsubstantiated rumors, of course. That $800,000 contract now comes down to 400, Cotton down to 300. It's going to be impossible to retain these guys. The only thing that I think keeps certainly higher paid imports or marquee players in the country is family and a travel ban. So if a travel embargo is lifted and international travel is again allowed before the start of the season in October, this deal looks, while it might save money, I don't know if it saves face. Let's keep having a look. 80K to 100K, they get a 27.5% reduction, and then 180 to 199, 45% reduction. So it's anywhere from 27.5% to 50. This is the most interesting clause in the whole thing to me, other than the 50%, is all players will have an opportunity In the 2 weeks leading up to free agency starting May 1st, but there's every chance that gets postponed. But all players will have an opportunity in the 2 weeks leading up to free agency to opt out of their contracts, with each player's rights being retained by their respective clubs. What an interesting line. The key line there for me in that is players can opt out of the contract with each player's rights retained by their respective... Oh, pardon me, just having a cup of tea. Let's do that again. The interesting line from that clause is not only that players can opt out of their contract, but that the contracts, the rights of each player is being retained by their respective clubs. So I read that measure and I think, is that to preserve the NBL connection, NBL team to NBL team? Let's say Xavier Cooks, for example, wants to opt out of his contract and move to a better offer at Perth. Can he do that? Or is this provision about preserving their rights from if, say, Xavier Cooks again, decides he wants to leave the Sydney Kings and go for bigger money in Europe, is his rights retained by the NBL upon his return? Or is there a buyout situation? That needs more clarification. This is only day two after this has come out. Furthermore, the report from Olgan Hewlett goes on to say each team will be capped at 10 players. A question I have straight up is that 10 rostered players or players including DPs? Last year, most teams had 11 or had to have a minimum of 11 rostered players and then a certain number of DPs, a minimum one, I think. So is that 10 rostered players or just 10 bodies, 10 actual players including DPs? I don't know. We'll find out. The other thing is a limit of two imports. Now, this is an interesting one. That doesn't seem to be a hard... ban on more than two imports. It could be, but it reads to me as like a sort of a... I mean, all of this reads to me as a bit of a handshake agreement that owners won't go over the salary cap, won't go over two imports in NBL 21. Next stars do not count towards roster numbers, so a team can have 11 if they have a next star. So 10 players plus 11. So with that line suggests to me that it's 10 players including DPs. So I'd imagine there's going to be 9 rostered players and then 1 DP and then if a team can swing it, a next star. That's the way I read it. There will be a redistribution of profits, either 5 or 10%, depending on how close the league and the teams come to breaking even or profit on next season. So this deal already has in it a little bit of two-way money going back and forth. But considering that the NBL... was looking at about 15 to 20 million in the red last year, certainly suggests that provision is sort of a looks better on paper than it does in reality. Will we see a trade coming off this wage issue? Will we see a trade? Will we see Australian talent returning from Europe due to travel bans and also a delay of their season? And I think I discussed it with Emiliano on my last podcast. When we talk about the NBL, we're talking about really two countries, Australia and New Zealand, working in collaboration, who are at a similar stage with this virus. I think New Zealand has slightly more stringent lockdown laws. But when you're talking about the EuroLeague and European basketball, especially EuroLeague and cup play, you're talking about teams crossing multiple borders to go to teams on other multiple countries, 10, 15 countries. Most of these teams, I think they fly, but you know sometimes they have a stopover in 3 or 4 different countries on the way there. So the idea that Europe's going to get itself together, it seems really unlikely. So I would actually, when I spoke to Emiliano, I hedged towards Australians staying in Europe. But now I sort of hedge more towards, well, if they're keen for cash, they're definitely going to come to the NBL because the NBL looks like it's put this wage cut and provision in place that they're ready to start in October regardless. And that bodes well for the NBL. But the problem is then the exchange. This is where the trade comes in. You get Australians returning from Europe, but obviously no import is, very few imports are seemingly going to want to come to Australia at a 50% wage reduction. And don't forget here, earning Australian dollar. So if they live in the United States, not only do they get half straight up because of these wage cuts, but then they lose almost another half or a quarter, I think I haven't looked at the exchange rate, when they go back to the United States, if they don't plan to live in Australia. So... tough one for American imports and European if a team decided to go that way. And that's all I really have to say about the wages there. Interesting was Andrew Bogut's response to these wage report leaks, quote unquote. And Andrew Bogut wrote on his Twitter, have to love at NBL club delegates who are supposed to take a confidentiality oath, leaking this to the media through what I assume is an agent. Those who leaked, parentheses, have a well-educated guess on which few, judging on previous form, end parentheses, don't deserve to be delegates. Hashtag Bush League, which is a hashtag Bogut's done now for this situation, as well as the handling of the NBL Grand Final. Oh, pardon me. Sorry, I'm enjoying a cup of tea. I'm sorry. I'm gagging for this. Oh, oh, it's divine. Interesting tweet. You know, this is now... yeah, very interesting tweet from Andrew Bogut. This is now the second time he's kind of taken a flamethrower to the NBL on its two major issues, Grand Final and now the wages. Let's dissect this even more, and this might get me into a bit of trouble. I don't know. It's smattered all over Hoops Forum. Went to Hoops Forum for the first time. I thought Twitter was hard as nails. Hoops Forum is brutal. It's like Herculean. It's like a gladiator pit in there. You gotta be ready for a bit of mudslinging, but it was a bit of fun. So let's look at that tweet from Andrew Bogut. So Olga Newlick breaks the story. From all accounts, I don't know if this is not a jab at Olgan or anyone, is seemingly close to Lighthouse Sports and Daniel Moldovan, who's an agent. That seems to be his closest connection. He's quite close with Simmons, who's a... he's not an agent, but others of that thing. And that's what I've read on Hoops Forum and other places. People seem pretty afraid to offer that up. I don't know if that's a slight or not, but I guess we'll find out. So let's say it's someone through that agent or agency. Not saying it is. I'm saying it could be. But knowing that and not knowing who the team delegates are, I have an idea who some of them are, but not all of them. But let's look at that stable of NBL talent that's signed to Lighthouse Sports. David Barlow, Sean Bruce, Xavier Cooks, Cam Glidden, Chris Golding, Matt Hodgson, Rob Lowe, Mitch McCarron, Kwat Noy. The ones that are likely delegates there are probably Barlow, Glidden, Golding, Hodgson, Rob Lowe, Mitch McCarron. They could all be delegates. I don't know. I think I've heard some of them. I think Mitch McCarron certainly is. I think Golding might be. Is one of them the leak? This is a pretty tentative, speculative connection. It could be one of them. Just as likely it could be none of them. And if I'm wrong about that, apologies. But my Twitter account is open. My Facebook is open. And I think I even have a phone number, which I forget the number of every time, but call me. Serious question, though. Who's more candid, communist China or the NBL? What's the fear of this wage... going back on Andrew Berger's tweet, what's the fear if it does come out? What's the difference? And also, an agent's going to find out anyway, isn't he? He's got to negotiate the contract. I don't even know if there was a leak. I think I would have thought an agent would find out almost immediately, if not from the NBL itself. What's the fear of it coming out? Okay. Oh, a business struggling during coronavirus. It's hardly headline news. Everyone's struggling, from retail to plasterers. I don't know. Probably not plasterers. I certainly understand the criticism of players who have made an oath not to gab and then have broken that oath. That I understand. But was there an oath in the first place? Was it an oath where they stand up and put their hand over their chest and give the Pledge of Allegiance? I don't know. I just think the truth will set you free. Like, I just think just the NBL will just bare its soul. Yeah, we're cutting wages because it's a crazy time. Like, we're not stupid. Everyone's a man on the street or a woman on the street. We know what's going on. But seems strange to me. Furthermore from this is, does Bogut return to the NBL? And as I said before, he's taken a flamethrower to the league in the last couple of months. Would he want to take on a 50% ownership stake of the Sydney Kings, which by Paul Smith's admittance lost money last year? Would he want to take on that debt? I don't know. But let's look at the last couple of things. And part of me leans towards no. I don't know. I've never spoken to Andrew Bogut. I'd love to. Does the NBL bring him joy? Seems to bring him a lot of frustration and anxiety. Not anxiety, but certainly frustration. You know, the way the finals was handled, whatever. Does he want to go through it again? I'm sure he probably loves playing and the players and interacting with them and the coaching staff. I'm sure he loves that. But, you know. So now the handling of the grand final, now the wage cut leaks. The other thing is Andrew Bogut doesn't close games. Daniel Kickett finishes for the Kings. So And then his body was seemingly really struggling. He had troubles throughout the year that he even admitted himself. So really interesting to see if he returns. Does basketball bring joy to Andrew Bogut, I guess, is my major question. There's only one guy who can answer that. This COVID-19 crisis, pandemic, this is a, let's look at the positives. This is a great chance to reduce wages that were seemingly too high, that owners, I think, for a while were pushing to bring down. I mean, they'd, what I find funny is they'd gone up last year when the league still wasn't seemingly in profit. So I don't know how they did that. I don't know how the players' union got more money when there's not more profit. Now, it'd be different if the NBL was on a boom time and making lots of money, then the players have every right to that. But it hasn't done that. It seems to have generated maybe not more debt, but still debt. Are the players going to take on that debt? Anyway, they just seem to go wages up. So this coronavirus seems to have, you know, been a chance to get them back in check to where the owners seem to want it. They have instigated these talks, by the sound of it. It also gives the league a chance to delay its season and return to winter when the league was very popular and profitable. Now, maybe that's a result of it being more in the 90s than being in the season. But, you know, it's an interesting idea and one that you can do, a measure you can bring in with little resistance. You just delay the start of the season. And when there's no TV deal or commercial TV deal, I don't see how that would matter. If you had a contract with Seven and it was, we're going to pay you $2 million or whatever for the leave, for the show, and it's got to be in October, it's got to happen, well, then you go without crowds. But it's a profit share deal at the minute where you get money from advertising, so you could have that deal any time of year. Really interesting. The other question I had is, why did the players agree to this deal and why do they agree to it now? Now, I know that free agency is coming up, but free agency doesn't matter to the players. It matters to the GMs. The players are there going, we know what we're doing. We want our wage. The wages are most important to the NBL players. I don't know why they didn't sort of stymie negotiations more and delay negotiations, if nothing else, push towards perhaps a lockout. I'm really surprised they agreed. 50% of your wage gone. I'm not saying it's unreasonable. I'm just saying why they'd agree at this time frame is what I found interesting. As I said, why should the NBL start in October? No commercial TV deal. The current is a profit share. If there's a delay to people not being in the stands, why wouldn't they just delay the start of the season until people can be in the stands? And perhaps that's a return to winter. Especially if attendance is the number one moneymaker for the NBL. How can the NBL return? Who's doing the modeling for the NBL? Who's sat down across the table from the NBL players and said, hey, here's what we think the money in the NBL is going to be like? Who's doing that? I'd love to chat to them about how they see basketball commercially in this country and how it pertains to the NBL. That would be really, really interesting. This whole deal suggests to me one of two things. Either one, this deal has been put in place because the NBL is anticipating starting in October without crowds. That's certainly because crowds is how they get their money. And if that's not there, then obviously they have to reduce wages. It's either that or not, it's either that and or the owners felt that wages were too high, regardless of coronavirus, and have now taken this opportunity to do that. Neither one is snaky, neither one is wrong, but it's a conversation that the owners just sort of come out and say. I don't like hiding around. It doesn't make sense to me. Let's jump on here. Importless NBL 21. Which all-local unit would win in NBL 21? Now, this was a question put to me by Lockie and Hamish of the Post Moves podcast about a week ago. That podcast, they deal mainly with NBA and NCAA, players and games and things. They have a few guests. I've listened to it briefly and enjoyed it. They're very affable. So definitely go and give the Post Moves podcast a listen. Why not? One third of you are going to love it. One third of you sadly will hate it. And one third of you will hear my recommendation and not go there anyway. No hard feelings any which way you go. But I thought I'd bring it to your attention nonetheless. So let's have a look at an importless NBL 21. Now, the question I've answered here isn't so much which local squad would win casting into the future in NBL 21. With the uncertain nature of contracts, that's a difficult, if not impossible, question to answer because you don't know who's going to go anywhere. So the question I've answered instead, or tried to, is who would have won NBL 20 without imports? So I've taken the imports out. reconstructed the starting fives predominantly. I didn't go through the whole list. I just basically got the starting fives and then calculated their PER, player efficiency rating, the John Hollinger stat, which is really about reducing a player's performance down to one. It's a pretty good measure of a player's contribution to the game, both defensively and offensively. And if you tally up that, you probably get a pretty good idea about who is going to be good. The final tally, and let's start at the bottom, and there's going to be some pretty surprises. Now, what I've done is tally the PERs of the starting five, or what I think is the starting five. So have a guess in your mind's eye who you think the ninth place team would be, all local in PER. Well, ninth place is not the Illawarra Warhawks as it was in NBL 20. The ninth place team would be the Cairns Taipans. So their starting lineup without imports would be Jawai, Majukden, Kuatnoi, Mirko Jerich, and Jared Kenny. Their total PER, 57.4. Now, I don't think anyone off the bench really escalates that for anyone. So they are the ninth place team, Cairns, 57.4. The eighth place team, who finished eighth this year? Was it Southeast Melbourne? Eighth place team without imports would be the Melbourne United. I was really surprised to see them this low in PER. They're starting five, JLA, David Barlow, Mitch McCarron, Chris Golding, and Shay Illy for a total of 60.6 PER. I thought that was really interesting because I actually quite liked the look of that team on paper. I think maybe because Achul came on late in the year, his PER isn't as high as it probably could be. He sits at 12.1, Barlow at 9.6, Golding 14.6. So, and Illy, of course, came off the bench for most of the year as well. So I think with a bigger role, I think there's sort of statistical anomaly there in Melbourne United. But nonetheless, let's jump on to number seven. And this is the team. Who do you think finished seventh? It's the ninth place Illawarra Hawks. 63.2 is their total PER from their starting five. Let's have a look at it. Biggs just smashed the PER in the NBL. Ogilvy, 15.7 PER. Grab rebounds, hit shots, hit assists. But he's one of the higher PERs of locals gone around. But anywho, their lineup I had as Ogilvy, Tim Conrad, Todd Blanchfield, Sunday Deck, and Emmett Nah. Another thing to remember with these guys is a lot of them, bar Nah, saw a lot of time. And I put Nah in because he had a higher PER than Glover. I thought, you know, why not? A lot of these locals saw time. I mean, they weren't backing up imports. This team barely had any, all respect to Billy Preston, Darrington Hobson, and Aaron Brooks. So that team, 63.2, Illawarra Hawks finished seventh. In sixth place, in the middle of the country, is the Adelaide 36ers, 65.9. So, and quite a distance from fifth place, who I'll sell in a second. But Adelaide's starting five would be Daniel Johnson, Harry Frolling, Drimmick, Tease, Dillon. Now, if we're talking about NBL 21, it's my understanding that Drimmick and Frolling are unlikely to return to the 36ers. But their total, 65.9. So I actually quite like the look of that team on paper as well. I think the statistical sort of black hole there is Dan Dillon, who I think if it was given a starting spot would actually perform pretty well. Kind of struggled the first half of the year in Adelaide, and to be honest, all year through. So, and then Tease, you know, they might look at a different option there. Hey, they could play Kevin White. So that's the sixth place team. Coming in fifth would be the Sydney Kings at 68.6. I was blown away to see them at fifth, out of the playoffs, technically. Their starting five, Bogut, Cooks, Newley, Lish, and Bruce. I mean, that backcourt gets a big hit without Casper Ware. This is one I probably should have looked at their bench, but I mean, all the main players are there. Cooks, Bogut, Newley, Lish, Bruce. Who's coming off the bench for them? So kick it. Adds a lot to PER. Probably should have included him. But nonetheless, I just went with starting fives because I couldn't be stuffed adding up all that stuff. 68.6 is their total, and that's their starting lineup. Sydney Kings, fifth. All right, now let's get into the playoffs. Fourth place is the New Zealand Breakers. And again, I'm a little bit surprised to see them not in the top two, but their lineup, Rob Lowe, Finn Delaney, Abercrombie, Weeks, and Webster. That I thought was a really good five. Delaney came a long way. Webster back. Their total PER, 72.2 for fourth spot. Next up, Perth Wildcats. 75.6. So they're not far off. The top place team was 77.3. I won't tell you who it is. But 75.6 is Perth, which I thought was, round about the mark. Their lineup I've got as Majuk, Nick Kay, Clint Steindl, Norton, and Wagstaff. Interesting little starting five. Like Majuk, could he handle those minutes? He had a 14.7 PER, which is pretty high. Nick Kay is by far the MVP, if you're going by PER. 22.4. The next nearest is Rob Lowe with 18.1. Creek with 18.3, but Nick Kay has a PER of 22.4. This guy flies so far under the radar, it is effing outrageous. But that's it. That's Perth Wildcats. They're coming in at third. Second, this is a team that jumps from second last to second best. Southeast Melbourne Phoenix. Now, I had them at 76.9 PER. Their lineup, Pinot, Trist, Creek, Adnam, Gibson. That's their best lineup. I imagine was less PER than Adnam, so I put him in, but more than Gibson. So, but I kind of thought that this would be the most likely lineup they'd go with. 76.9 PER. The PER darling for them is Creek at 18.3 and Pinot at 17.3. Trist, 15.9 is the one that you'd look at and go, could he maintain? Gibson, only 9.8. There you go, PER. Number one, you've probably worked it out, is the Brisbane Bullets. They really kind of smashed this thing. 77.3, 0.4 ahead of Southeast Melbourne and 20 points ahead of Cairns, who are the bottom players. Their lineup, Brisbane Bullets, let's have a look at it. Matt Hodgson, Will Magnay, Cam Glidden, Sobey and Kiddy. Whew, Hodgson, sorry. Oh, actually, I scrapped that about... So Nick Kay was 22.5 in PER. The next two after that that are best are Hodgson at 20.5 and Johnson, DJ, at 20.2. But still, two whole PER points ahead, Nick Kay. Crazy. But Hodgson, Magne, Glidden, Sobey, and Kadi, a total of 77.3 for top spot. That's a pretty good team. It's a damn good team. Super tall. But the eye test... And when you really think about this, what teams would do well? I think the team that would finish last is Cairns. Not because I actually quite like their roster ahead of Illawarra's, but I think Scott Machado was such a huge part of the... He was the straw that stirred their drink and stirred everything else that could be stirred for the Cairns Taipans. Looking at the eye test, I still kind of like Sydney. I mean, Sean Bruce came a long way. Kevin Lish newly cooks Bogut. That's a good team. So I'd put them well ahead of where they're at. But to me, the top four to the eye test would be Sydney, Perth, New Zealand Breakers, and Brisbane. I feel like they'd be a top four, probably in that order. Brisbane, I like New Zealand. I think Webster, Weeks, Lowe, that's a hell of a team. But no, I'd probably go with Breakers, Kings, Brisbane, and then Perth. I think that would be your top four, and that's the way it goes. I hope that was a bit of fun, everyone. PER, always good. Let's do this. I wasn't going to add this on, but why not? You know, why not? If you watch NBL Overtime, Corey Homicide-Williams is really eager to take the dynamite to the Sydney Kings. So I thought I'd preempt that and have a look and just see if he's on the mark or not. Corey Homicide, the Kings need to blow it up. Is he wrong? Is he right? It depends on the Kings' objectives for NBL 21 and, of course, these crazy circumstances that are going on. If they want to win the title under perfect circumstances with imports, I think Corey's kind of right. I don't think it's a gross overreaction to say that this team can't stop Bryce Cotton right now and through the rest of the 2020s. The championship goes through Bryce Cotton if he returns to the NBL. Which I think he's likely to. He seems to be an Australian. He lives here. He has family here, both Australian and American, and he goes for it. But anyway, therefore, a blow it up or major change is not only ideal, but necessary. Can we use that word? I know that seems crazy, but, you know, if you play the status quo, if you just kind of sit on your hands and think, oh, no, we'll roll it back. Did anyone look at the Kings last year and think, oh, yeah, they're a couple of breaks of the game away from beating Perth? I can see an argument either way. Toughy. First things first, this was a win now team. Let's look at the ages of this team. Bogut, 35, Stroke, 36. Tate, 24, 25, he's okay. Newley, 35, 36. Newley, 35, 36. Kevin Lish, 33, 34. Casper Ware, 30, 31. That's a win now team if ever I've seen it. They've got one spot occupied by guys in their 20s, and that's Tate, Cooks, and Luzada. Interesting. Whereas you look at Perth, who are, you know, the championship goes through this team, and if you're the Kings, they're definitely the logo you've got up on your dartboard and your target list. Plumlee, 31-32. Nick Kay, 27-28, prime. Trico White, 30-31, subprime. Cotton, 27-28, prime. Mitch Norton, 26-27, prime. So whereas you've got Tate in his just semi-subprime, and the rest past prime, except Casper Ware, who's prime, you've got three players on the Kings who are in their prime and only getting better and are about to step into their best basketball. And, you know, 34 games, if you go to the finals or however many, around about the 35 mark, is a lot of games of basketball to play. And if you're a bit older, it's difficult. What is the Sydney Kings crunch time lineup? I feel like the Wildcats were more secure in this. Their lineup was, you know, Cotton, White, Wagstaff, Kay, and then Damian Martin. That was their lineup they went to in the crunch, and they knew it. Even with Plumlee around, they knew that was the lineup they were going with. So against Melbourne in Game 3, a huge must win. Their crunch lineup in the last 3 minutes were Casper Ware, Kevin Lish, Didi, Luzada, Tate, and Kickett. Is this the Kings' best lineup, or was this a counter to Melbourne's lineup? Why I didn't take a lineup from the Perth Grand Final, I don't know. I went with Melbourne because I thought that was the games that were a little bit closer. Either way, I think it's a pretty fair representation of their most talented lineup. You know, comparing that to the Kay, Wagstaff, Cotton, Norton lineup, the big question for the Kings, I think, going forward is Xavier Cooks. 6'8", 24, 25 years old, depending on when his birthday is, going into NBL 21. Is he going to mature into a rangy, long wing player, or an undersized active big who gets on the offensive glass? Cooks shot 4 of 32 from the outside for 12.5%. From 12.5% from three. So he shoots 100 three-pointers and 12.5 of them go down. That's not a good percentage. 17 of 36 from the foul line for 47%. So he's splitting free throws. You know, he's going to make a choice with his career, I suppose. Does he bulk up and become that power forward who's active on the glass, or does he work on that jump shot? He's at 84 kilos, right? Nick Kay's 104. So he's got to put on 20 kilos of muscle just to meet Nick Kay, who's the sort of benchmark for power forwards in the NBL. That, to me, is the Sydney Kings. Should they blow it up or not? The other news, of course, is that Isaiah Todd and Jalen Green, two young American possible Next Stars, have decided to go with the G League ahead of the NBL Next Stars program. That spells, certainly for NBL 21, an interesting predicament for the Next Stars program, where it looks like the G League money has come up, and then also with the travel problems and the exchange rate and a few other things, it looks as though a lot of players aren't pursuing that Next Stars route as a moneymaker, which was the reason why they came in the first place. One of the reasons they came in the first place, Hampton and Ball, you know, the money was good. Now it seems like the money is perhaps not quite as good. So that makes it difficult. So the Next Stars program's got an interesting road ahead. But ultimately, you know, the league lost two kids in their late teens who would have scored anywhere between sort of 8 and 10 points, a couple of rebounds, looking at the four we've had in the past. So, you know, and for, you know, that would have been nice. There would have been a nice talking point. Would that have been great to watch? Well, that would have been fun to watch. And again, a nice basketball experiment. But, you know, by all accounts, Bryce Cotton's still around and a few others. So hopefully they can fill the void. Guys, that's all I've really got for you. Let me just have a quick look here. Nope, that's it. Thanks very much, everyone. Strange pod, strange times, but I hope you enjoyed it. As always, follow me on Twitter @NBL Pocket Pod. You can find me on Facebook, NBL Pocket Podcast. I've got a little video thing coming out that you might like. NBL Incredibles, I haven't forgotten about that. That's a PlayStation thing if you're a bit of a nerd and you like your video games. By all means, follow that. And then have a look at the Post Moves podcast. Why not? You know, you got a lot of free time on your hands, perhaps. Good way to fill it. Thanks very much, everyone. See you again.